chilly up here. I hope everyone's had breakfast this morning. Nope. Okay. I heard some All right. So Dennis didn't eat breakfast this morning. Well, Dennis, you're going to be hungry because I'm going to talk about food again today. There's no time like the week of Thanksgiving where food is not more on the American's mind. It's going to be, you know, it's interesting. I can't speak for everybody's family, but one of the things that I'm looking forward to, one of the few things I'm looking forward to this Thanksgiving, with all the different changes and adjustments that we're going to have to make and that we're not going to be traveling to see family on Thursday, is the fact that since I'm going to be preparing my own food, I don't have to wait. Now, I'm just going to tell you, in the Black family, Thanksgiving, you wake up, and it's like you pretty much just starve yourself until the food's ready, right? Nobody eats anything. You walk through the kitchen. Hopefully, you can just maybe get a little piece of dark meat turkey or something. Maybe you'll taste something. But generally speaking, you know, we just sit around and starve, waiting. And then it's like, oh, we're going to eat it. They'll give you a time, right? Oh, everything will be ready at 12 o'clock. But certainly something is not going to be ready at 12. Exactly, right? Oh, well, we're still waiting on the corn pudding, or, well, such and such not here yet. They said they're only 20 minutes away, which is never really 20 minutes away. But they've got the rolls or the sweet potato pies. Something is always taking a little bit longer, and you just wait. And you want to be able to stuff 3-4 helpings in for all the food. So you don't want to ruin it by eating too much for breakfast, right? Some of you right now, you're frustrated thinking about it, aren't you? Because it happens every Thanksgiving. We think about food, and yet we all know that Thanksgiving and that time to come together to sit together as a family and have that meal, it's more than just the food. Of course, after you eat a couple bites, it's more than just the food. Then you can really focus on just the family and being able to be a part of one another's company. But when we think about mealtime, I kind of want to take a little bit of focus today and ask the question, what really goes into a meal? What really goes into that time where we sit down and have meals together? Because hopefully we'll come away from what we're about to read and in the lesson here and understand that God expects more from us than just coming together and sitting down during Thanksgiving and having a meal. It's not just like, you know, putting a plate together, and I'm one of those people, I like to keep mine separate. I don't want the cranberry sauce to touch the dressing. You know, I remember I don't even eat deviled eggs, but sometimes you get it. I would get it just because they would look really pretty because I have my plate really organized well. All it takes is one person to bump into you, they mess it all up. You know, most people in my family, they don't separate their stuff. They just put it on there and they pile it on. Charisse has a cousin. She has a couple of cousins, but two in particular, Aaron and Nathan. Aaron and Nathan. We do this when we go to her family. Aaron and Nathan, I know they're not watching this, but they may listen to this at one point. Here's the thing. Everybody knows Aaron and Nathan are going to be late for Thanksgiving dinner. They're not going to be there on time. But with that, you know, you got to eat what you're going to eat before Aaron and Nathan show up. Aaron and Nathan don't care about separating the food on the plate. Aaron and Nathan showed up to finish off everything. There's always that family member who's like, you better get all the cranberry sauce you're going to get now because I just heard Aaron pull up. In fact, there's his kids right there. You better hurry up and get what you're going to get. What really goes into a meal? Because there's all these little things. We know our families and we can identify personality and characteristics. But I bring up Aaron and Nathan as an example, just like we know which aunt or which grandmother, who's going to bring certain dishes. Everybody kind of has that personality and character, and we know everybody. The question is, what is said about you? What is your personality? What do you bring to the meal beyond just the food or the dish that you're responsible for? What is thought of you? How do you represent Christ at a meal? The title I've given today's lesson is Food for Thought. And hopefully we'll get through this quickly because I don't want Dennis' stomach to start growling. I don't want you to have to hear that. But we're going to talk about food a little bit here because sometimes when we have that meal, we can think so much about the actual food that we can lose sight of the fact that Jesus kind of expects more of us than to just show up and eat. Whether it's Thanksgiving or whether it's Tuesday, whether it's driving through the Wendy's drive-thru just to get something on your way home, or whether you have to go, you know, make sure that you stop because you ran out of a particular ingredient, you don't have any nutmeg, or you're missing something, so you got to make these pies, and you're like, whatever it is you're planning to eat, whatever it is that goes into that meal, there's far more that goes into a meal than just the food. And as Christians, as followers of Christ, there's an expectation, dare I say a responsibility, that we have to bring more to the meal than just some food or our appetites. I want to look at a couple of examples of this. And I'm going to start in Hebrews chapter 12, read a few short verses here. Starting verse 14, it says, make every effort to live in peace with everyone and to be holy. Without holiness, no one will see the Lord. See to it that no one falls short of the grace of God and that no bitter root grows up to cause trouble and defile many. See that no one is sexually immoral or is godless like Esau, who for a single meal sold his inheritance rights as the oldest son. Afterward, as you know, when he wanted to inherit this blessing, he was rejected. Even though he sought the blessing with tears, he could not change what he had done. Now, this passage here is talking about this word holiness, as it's translated in the NIV, which is what I'm reading here. Holiness, and just a brief understanding what holiness is. Things that are holy are things that are sacred, things that are designated specifically for God. When it talks about holiness here, he's saying that without holiness, without you being holy, without you understanding that you are separate and apart and are designated for God and his purpose, that you can't see God. Holiness is not just this theory or this concept. It is, holiness is a way of life. Think of it this way. It's like when you are a person, let's say you work in one of the branches of the armed services, right? You're not your own. You are set apart for a job, a responsibility, a duty. When you work at a particular place and they give you a uniform, you represent that uniform. You are not your own because you're on the clock. Holiness means that we are set apart, that we consecrate ourselves, we clean ourselves up, that we're constantly reminded of our responsibility, our designation, that our bodies. So, and I say this because as it talks about being sexually immoral, and then it jumps to Esau, you might think, well, that's kind of disconnected. See, what's to be understood here is that even your own body, that you're not permitted to just go out and be sexually immoral and live any kind of way with your body because your body is not your own. That holiness means my body is to be used for God's purpose. But then it dives off a little bit here into Esau. And you think, well, what does Esau have to do with it? It says, you know, Esau, he traded his birthright. He traded this designation as the firstborn son who got the double portion, that all of God's plans and all of the assignments that back then in the Old Testament, God used this bloodline, this idea that the firstborn son was to carry on the name, that he was to be not only the rightful heir of the inheritance and all the riches and the blessings, but that he was to carry on the name, that he was designated the torchbearer, if you will. And it says that for a meal, not all the food in the supermarket, for one meal, he basically forfeited this. And I want to look into what goes into this because, and we're going to spend some time on Esau here, because when we think about what we're about to do with Thanksgiving dinner, or even in some cases what we're not going to do because of COVID-19, because of travel restrictions, what we're not going to do for Thanksgiving, it's important for us to understand that if we're not careful, we can be a little bit like Esau in how we participate in our meals with one another. How we impact the lives of those around us matters beyond each moment that we're in. See, sometimes we can look at a moment and we'll have a moment of weakness. We'll be tempted. We'll give in. We'll just say, oh, well, you know what? I just didn't have the strength. I just couldn't stand up under the pressure. And we lose sight of how much of an impact that has. We can kind of forget that we're supposed to be holy, that we are supposed to be set aside. And so we'll do something in anger. We'll do something in haste. We'll do something and lose sight of the fact that you're not just doing something that is disobedient. You're not just doing something that's wrong. This is not just a misstep. You're actually doing something that is dishonoring God. You're doing something that's unholy. And it's not only unholy because it was disobedient, it was not holy because you forget who you represent. You forget the designation that you have. It's like you forgot that flag that you're wearing on your uniform. You forgot the name that you're supposed to uphold. That you're always on duty. You're always on the clock. That when you've given your life to Christ, you're always being watched. You're always representing the God of the universe. This is interesting. I saw this. This says this talks about the cost, the average cost of Thanksgiving. It says that it was down last year slightly from 2018. Now, we don't know what it's going to be this year, obviously, because we got a few more days, and they imagine it's going to be slightly different. But this is just showing the cost of the average Thanksgiving dinner from 1986 to 2018. So roughly, what, we're talking 30 years maybe? A little more than 30 years. And how the cost has gone up by $20. Now, I don't know exactly because I didn't do all the research. I don't know if this is per plate. So I don't know if Aaron and Nathan are like tripling this amount by themselves. I don't know how this all works. But the point is that not only are people spending more money, but it costs more. Why? Because of inflation and the, you know, the cost of a turkey and that kind of stuff changes. And sometimes meals, people's diets change, and suddenly everybody's become health conscious. And they don't, oh, you know, we're going to get sugar-free sweet potato pie this year, and nobody wants to eat it, and so they don't do that again, right? Things change, you know, especially when you start getting sugar-free stuff. And, you know, that's just one of those where I'm just going to take my medication because I can't do sugar-free desserts. We had sugar-free cheesecake or something like that. I was like, why even have it? You know, well, let's just all eat a Snickers. I'm not eating sugar-free cheesecake. The point is that the cost has slowly adjusted and changed. And this one I found interesting, too, because this actually itemized how much it went up from year to year, and it showed the cost had gone up on certain things And it, like, so for example, you probably can't read this at home. I'm sure you probably can't read it here in the building, but like this, it says green peas per pound went up 6 cents on average. First of all, who even brought green peas to Thanksgiving dinner, right? That's another story. Pumpkin pie, we don't eat that in the black family. We have sweet potato pie. But for those who do eat pumpkin pie, the cost went down 7 cents for the pumpkins. But then it went up 12 cents on the pie shells. Who's investing in pie shells, right? And then you got rolls here, went up 21 cents. That's probably because people just, my mother and grandmother, we have this tradition in our family. My Uncle Daryl, he's the only one who does it now. They make these wonderful yeast rolls, and he's like the only one that has a recipe. That's probably why this cost went up, because he's charging more. He will actually sell you this stuff. Cranberries, all these different things. It's itemizing and it's showing that the total on average went down 24 cents from 2015. This is 2019. American Farm Bureau Federation. I don't know how they estimated this stuff. The point I'm getting at here is when we think about the cost of a meal, we can quantify it in money, right? We can add it up in dollars and cents. You know, you can plan it and say, okay, we're going to cut back a little bit here because we know last year we didn't eat 10 sweet potato pies. We only needed 4 of them or 5 of them. Or we're not going to even, you know, you tell your aunt or your cousin, you know what, you don't have to bring anything this year because the past few years you brought something, it was terrible, nobody ate. We don't even want to hurt your feelings. Don't even bring it. We're going to, we can count up the money and the cost of each meal. The question is, do we consider the cost of our example, what we bring as Christians to each meal? What it is, what exactly is it when you gather with your family that you're bringing to each meal? Are you a net positive or a net negative? Are you bringing Christ with you to dinner, or did you leave him at home? And if you did leave Christ at home and you decide I'm not going to bring, what is the cost of that? And I want to tie this back into Esau, who was referenced in that last passage. Turn with me, if you will, to Genesis chapter 25. And looking at verse 27, because we're going to find something very interesting about Jacob and Esau here. Most of us know the story about Jacob and Esau and how Jacob deceived him, he swindled him, he set him up. But I want to dig a little bit deeper into this and see what went into this meal. Starting in verse 27, it says, "The boys grew up, and Esau became a skillful hunter, a man of the open country, while Jacob was content to stay at home among the tents. Isaac, who had a taste for wild game, loved Esau, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Once when Jacob was cooking some stew, Esau came in from the open country famished. He said to Jacob, 'Quick, let me have some of that red stew. I'm famished.' That is why he was also called Edom." Edom is translated loosely to mean the word red. "Jacob replied, 'First sell me your birthright.' 'Look, I'm about to die,' Esau said. 'What good is the birthright to me?' But Jacob said, 'Swear to me first.' So he swore an oath to him, selling his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau some bread and some lentil stew. He ate and drank and then got up and left. So Esau despised his birthright." Now, let's put this all in the context here, because just reading it on the surface, it can just seem like, man, he must have really been hungry, right? Maybe he was exaggerating a little bit because he's out there in the field. He's out there hunting or doing whatever he's doing. He's like, "Oh, I'm so hungry. What good is it to me if I'm dead," right? And surely Jacob would not have, you know, held him hostage for a meal if he was actually starving. But let's face it, what's going on here is that Eli, as it says here at the very end, so Eli despised his birthright. What does it mean to despise something? What he's saying here is, He's saying that Esau didn't really want the birthright anyway. He didn't really, and it wasn't that he didn't want the riches and the blessings and the double portion and everything, but what you see here is there's a pattern of behavior. If we go back and we look in the very, you know, and before this particular part of the passage, and in the interest of time, we're not going to read through the whole thing. But what we see here is that God was actually pretty upset with the way that Jacob, with the assistance of his mother, set Esau up. But the fact is, it had become apparent that Esau didn't want the responsibility that came with the birthright. So this wasn't just some, you know, rash, spur of the moment kind of, I'm impulsive and I'm just going to do this. It was quite impulsive. It was very irresponsible. But more than anything, Esau in this birthright, when he says, hey, what good is it to me anyway if I'm dead? You know, he's saying, this thing is not worthwhile. I don't really want the responsibility and the duties that come with this. I was reminded, I was telling a friend of mine, we were talking about England. And he was asking me about the Queen of England. And we were kind of talking about history. And it reminded me of the, and I saw this, this was documented very well. If you go back and read history, there's a movie called The King's Speech. Talked about Queen Elizabeth's father and how he had the stammer and the stutter. And what people who were obviously back then or people who are historians understand was that the reason why he ascended to the kingship in the first place, even though he was actually down the line, was because his brother, who was actually the older brother, who was actually the king before him after their father died, he didn't want to be responsible for being the king. He wanted to live wild and loose, and he didn't like all the restrictions that came with being the king. He couldn't marry who he wanted to marry. He couldn't be in love. He couldn't go out. He had to do all these things that were kind of restrictive and cumbersome and got in his way. So he renounced the throne. He gave the kingship. He gave the monarchy over to his brother. And the movie, The King's Speech, actually does a little bit to chronicle that. If you go back and read history, read books, you'll see a little bit more about it. But I raise that as an example because that's what we're having here with Esau and Jacob. Esau didn't want it. He didn't want to have to be all buttoned up. He didn't want to have to do the things that came with being the heir coming behind Isaac. And so it wasn't just that he was so hungry that he wanted this meal as much as, you know what? Give me what I want. Let me have what I want in this moment. Because honestly, I don't really want this birthright thing anyway. Now I raise this because when we think about what it means to be a Christian, sometimes having to be the person who's the bigger man, having to be the person who forgives, having to be the person who doesn't participate in some of the unrighteous things that our friends and family can get into, sometimes that can seem like more of a burden and a responsibility that we don't want anyway. And so we would, in an honest moment, maybe in a convenient moment like Esau, we would gladly kind of give that up. Because you know what? I like using foul language too, maybe. I don't like that restriction that comes with having to represent God. You know, I don't always want to share. I don't always want to be sacrificial. And so when we think about what goes into a meal, we think about, even frankly, I think about myself. I'll use an example with my mom. You know, I've told you all about my mom. She's recovering. She has COVID-19. And I want to go to Ohio and visit my mother. The selfish part of me feels like, you know what? I'll do it. My kids want to see her. We want to travel. But what would have to actually go into that meal is more than just me seeing my mom. I would be saying, and I would be projecting that as much as I claim to love Christ, I'm actually more important than my mom. I'm more important than other people. What matters to me most? In fact, that's actually how my mom got sick in the first place. You know, families, you know, especially young people, they're getting a little restless. They're tired of quarantine. They're tired of all these rules. And so they just say, I'm going to go out to a party. I'm going to go hang out, or I'll hang out with some friends, and I don't know who all is going to be here, but I'll take chance because I'm healthy. And then what do? They bring it back to other family, people that they love and people that they care about. See, what we can learn from Esau in this is that there's a responsibility that we have to take hold of. In some cases, that means, you know what? Yeah, we're going to get together as a family because it's important and it matters, but I'm going to have to wear a mask the whole time. Or it could just be that, you know what? We're going to have to do it over Zoom. I appreciate it. Linda was telling us about how she's been planning for the family, kind of all by herself. She's been planning for the family to do this Zoom Thanksgiving. And there's a lot of that going on. People are getting creative with their ideas about how they're going to get together for Thanksgiving because certain family members are just not healthy enough, or they're too far away, or they're in places where, you know, we just don't want to take those chances. Frankly, some people, if they go and visit their family, that means they're not going to be able to go back to work. And so they're coming up with these creative ideas. So Linda's planning this Zoom, Linda Hill, she's planning this Zoom Thanksgiving for the family to get together. And I was talking to another friend of mine who was doing that, and they said, you know, the difficulty is that nobody wants to participate. Nobody really wants to do it. They're like, you know what, I'll just take my chances. It just doesn't feel like Thanksgiving. It just doesn't feel authentic. What's the good? There's one lady, I heard this on television, where she's coming together. She said basically they're preparing the meal, and then they're going to distribute the plates to everybody in the family, like, you know, kind of do it distancing. And then they're all going to eat the meal together while they're all on Zoom in a big old Brady Bunch kind of screen. And they said, oh, that'd be creative, that'd be nice. But some people just don't want to do it. And as crazy as it sounds, sometimes we think about Esau. Esau was thinking about himself. Esau wanted what he wanted in that moment. And frankly, in an honest moment, Esau didn't want the responsibility that came with representing the family and representing God anyway. Sometimes we have to ask ourselves, do we really want the responsibility? Do we really want to take on the challenge that says, I'm going to stand up for right, even though the family, they're constantly making fun of me. They're constantly mocking me. They know that I'm different because of my relationship with God. And you know what? I'm kind of getting tired of that anyway. Do we give in? Do we understand that what goes into this meal, this Thanksgiving, what goes into every meal that we have with our neighbors, with our friends, with our family, is more than just what we want. It's more than just what matters to us. What should go into it is an understanding that every time I show up to a meal, I represent the one true living God. And I have to live that way. We should never take for granted the trust that comes with being chosen by God. God entrusted Esau with something that he took for granted. God entrusted him that he was going to set an example for other nations. God expected Esau to be responsible. And in much the same way, as easy as it is to look at Esau and think, how could you forfeit that? How could you throw all of that away? We have to ask ourselves, what are we going to do? Because we've got decisions to make. We've got some meals that we got to sit down and eat too. How are we going to move forward? How much do we care about being responsible for bearing the name of Christ Jesus? How much do we care about that as opposed to getting what we want? Because it's very easy to look at Esau and think, well, Esau was selfish. He was nearsighted. He didn't see the big picture. He didn't understand that there are consequences that come with this, Esau. But this was not just an offset or just this one moment. This was a pattern. This was something that Esau, frankly, was dealing with the whole time. Jacob knew that. He knew that Esau didn't want it. He didn't want the responsibility. Their own mother understood it. That's another lesson, another conversation for another day, what Rebecca understood about her children. And she's like, no, we can't have this. And that's why later on it talked about how hairy Esau was. And so she would trick their father once he was older by sending Jacob in, disguising him as though he was Esau, knowing that he couldn't see well and that he would give him the birthright, thinking that this was his hairy older son. But in the grand scheme of things, as much as we can look at Esau and think, how could you despise such a gift? God has given each and every one of us a gift as Christians. He's given us his spirit. He's given us the right to call ourselves his representative, his ambassador. Do you take that into every meal? Do you take that into every encounter with every relationship you have? Do you remember that you've been entrusted? When you sit down and have Thanksgiving dinner, be it in person or virtually, how much thought went into that? How much thought went into, I'm not just going to show up here because it's Thanksgiving, I want to get together with family, or because it's time to eat turkey, or it's time to watch football, or it's time to gather. How much thought goes into, I need to reflect Christ. I need to be his ambassador. I represent the one true living God. Because as easy as it is to look at Esau and think, he just kind of took it for granted. As it says, he despised it. He loathed the idea that he had to wear and carry this burden. Do we walk in honor, grateful, humbled at the idea that you get to be Christ's ambassador when you sit down with your family? Or when you take the stand and say, no, you know what? I'm concerned about grandma's safety. I don't want Uncle Joe to get sick. I'm not coming to the meal. I will watch you on Zoom. We can FaceTime. I'm going to engage and I want to be a part of this, but the safety and the health of my family matters more. Do you do that even if it's unpopular, even if it's not something that the rest of the family is going to be okay with? Do you do that understanding that I'm not doing this just for me? I'm not doing this just out of my wants and my wishes, but I'm doing this because even if this isn't what I want, I represent Christ. And part of representing Christ means that we have to do things that sometimes are unpopular. How much do we take the responsibility of being Christ's ambassadors into each meal that we have, each encounter that we have? Normally, I would go into some questions and some points and things like that, and I see some of you already grabbing your cameras. You're getting ready to take a picture. There's no picture. There's no questions today. Just one. No bullet points, no talking points, nothing to think about except for how much are you going to take responsibility and own and embrace the actual birthright that we all have as children of God? How much are you going to look at the next opportunity that you have to sit down with your family? Because let's face it, and I've heard it from both sides, some people are thinking, you know what? Grandma's getting older. Grandpa's getting older. I don't know that we're going to have another Thanksgiving. I don't know that we're going to have another holiday that we're going to be able to eat together. I've got a cousin who's sick, or I've got a sister who ailing. I've got somebody who's dealing with cancer here. Somebody's dealing with heart failure. There's all these different things. And we're thinking, when am I going to have another opportunity? The question I want to leave us with is, as Christ's ambassadors, are you making the most of every opportunity? Do you know that family member, that friend, that coworker, that person who does not have a relationship with God? They are not Christians. They're not disciples. They're not following Jesus. Do you walk into each encounter, each meal, each lunch break? Are you going to walk into your Zoom meeting or your small gathering for Thanksgiving, understanding that I represent Christ here? And I'm not going to take my ambassadorship for granted. I'm not going to look at it as a burden that I have to share the gospel because I may be the only Christian and true disciple that this person knows. But am I going to walk into it with conviction and with an honor, saying, even though I'm sinful, even though I'm not perfect, even though I fail, God has still entrusted me to walk into this meal and bring more than just food or conversation or an appetite. He's expecting me to bring Christ with me. What are you going to bring to your meal at Thanksgiving? Because we can all bring more than a pie or cranberry sauce or the turkey if we truly understand the magnitude, the gravity, the responsibility that we have as Christ followers to bring him along with us to each and every meal.